Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, exploring pressing public management issues facing us today. I'm Michael Keegan, your host. In meeting varied missions, government executives confront significant challenges. Responding properly to them must be guided and informed by the harsh fiscal and budgetary realities of the day. It can no longer be simply a wishful platitude that government do more with less. Leaders need to change the way government does business to make smarter use of increasingly limited resources, leveraging technology and innovation to be more efficient, effective, anticipatory, adaptive, and most of all, evidence-based in delivering missions and securing the public trust. Government executives, however, must also avoid the tyranny of the present or the next budget cycle and recognize that challenges of today often morph into hazards of tomorrow. So anticipating the future, that is, getting out ahead of events rather than being subsumed by them, becomes integral to positioning, resourcing, and preparing their agencies for what may come while always keeping focus on their primary responsibilities. This edition of the Business of Government magazine underscores the importance of correlating short-term decision-making with long-range consequences. We highlight the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness by introducing you to key government executives, detailing the work of public management practitioners, and offering insights from leading academics. First up, conversation with leaders. Throughout the year, I have the pleasure of speaking with key government executives and public sector leaders about their agencies, key accomplishments, and their vision of 21st century government. The four profiled in this edition of the Business of Government magazine manifest the leadership and strategic foresight needed to meet their varied missions. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, leads an agency that has for 60 years been at the forefront of research in infectious and immune-mediated diseases, microbiology, and immunology. Dr. Fauci outlines his agency's strategic priorities.
So we've divided up the four major areas of emphasis of NIAID into HIV/AIDS, infectious diseases other than HIV/AIDS, which include the standard established infections, emerging and reemerging infections, and even biodefense, such as having defense against anthrax or other attacks. That's the second. The third is basic and clinical research in the immune system, understanding how it works, diseases of aberrant function of the immune system or deficiency of the immune system. And the fourth area is global health. Okay. So the vision of where we want to go with that. HIV/AIDS, after three-plus decades now of a devastating pandemic, we have the scientific basis now with prevention modalities and treatment that's highly effective and a quest but not yet accomplished towards a vaccine. We feel we can turn around the trajectory of the pandemic so that the vision is that within a reasonable period of time, we'll see an AIDS-free generation. And by that, we mean the tipping point where the number of new infections is less than the number of people who are put on therapy, and the deflection of the pandemic starts to go down as opposed to what it's been doing for a few decades is going up. So that's a vision there. The vision for emerging and reemerging infectious diseases is to develop what we call platforms of vaccines and drugs where we don't have to keep chasing after each individual new emerging and reemerging drug, that we have capabilities of being able to rapidly sequence, of being able to develop what we call platforms for vaccines and therapies that would be more universal rather than trying to chase after everything that might emerge. With regard to immunology, it's just fundamental, good, sound, basic research to understand the mechanisms of immune function and how we might suppress aberrant mechanisms and enhance deficient mechanisms.
We live in an era of constrained resources and unprecedented scientific opportunities. Dr. Fauci underscores the real challenge. How do we get the biggest bang for our buck? It all connects to anticipating the unexpected. Dr. Fauci continues.
challenges. There are scientific challenges, and there are management and logistic challenges. So one of the major challenges that one has is that we are dealing right now, the reality, in an era of constrained resources, where simultaneously it's an unprecedented era of scientific opportunities. So the challenge is, in an arena of constrained resources, how do you get the best bang out of the buck? How do you push those extraordinarily groundbreaking areas of research that ultimately will benefit public health at the same time as you realize that you have constrained resources? And that requires prioritization. Prioritization because there are a lot of good ideas. You can't pursue all of them. So to me, that's really one of the important challenges. The other is the particular challenge that is somewhat unique for my institute in that it's the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, so that most every other institute at the NIH, including ourselves, is responsible for the basic and clinical research in the particular area for which we're responsible. If it's the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, it's Heart, Lung, and Blood. If it's the kidney, diabetes, it's kidney. For us, it's infectious diseases and immunology. So that's a kind of responsibility and challenge that is a bit different from an institute in which they have serious diseases, but they're generally predictable. It isn't every week or month that a new cancer is discovered or a new form of heart disease, where at any given time there'd be a brand new infectious disease.
That's right. At any given time, we can face a brand new infectious disease. But what are the unique characteristics that define them as infectious? Fauci explains.
So if you look at infectious diseases, they do have a number of unique characteristics, one of the most important of which is that if you look evolutionarily how a human develops over millennia, mm-hmm. You know, if you look at how evolution brings you from a situation where you have skills or not, and then you develop them over thousands of years, microbes have the capability through mutations of changing characteristics in minutes to days because their replication capability. So we replicate every 18 to 27 years. Microbes, like HIV, replicate thousands of times per day. And when you replicate, you have the risk of there being a mutation. Now, that mutation may have no effect on your function, or it might have a significant effect on your ability to spread from one person to another, on your ability or not to be virulent, namely to make someone really sick. So when you're talking about infectious diseases, it's a constant evolution. You have a disease, it spreads, you develop a drug, you treat a person, and then all of a sudden, after a period of years, the virus or the bacteria develops resistance and you got to come in with another drug. So it isn't an open and shut case. We've dealt with that problem. It's a constant, dynamic, emerging world of microbes that will never completely, for sure, wipe out the human species, but it constantly is adapting itself to its own survival. So when you think of infectious diseases, it's a mysterious and in many respects wonderful world of evolving viruses and bacteria and others. It's something that we need to stay a step ahead of it when we think in terms of how we intervene with therapies or vaccines or diagnostics. It's different in many respects from diseases that have a relatively stable profile. This isn't a particularly stable profile. It's constantly changing.
This constant state of the unexpected correlates to a fact of life, that microbes are resilient and adapt to whatever is thrown at them.
It's almost a fact of life that microbes, because of their replicative and mutational capability, adapt to whatever you throw at them, environmentally, drug-wise, immune system, what have you. So when you get an antibiotic or an antiviral and you treat someone, unless you completely eliminate that bacteria or that virus, you will naturally select for the mutation that is resistant to getting killed. So it's an inevitability of the interaction between the human host's use of antibiotics and antivirals to suppress the virus or the bacteria, and the virus and the bacteria's inherent replicative and mutational capability to avoid the bad things you're trying to do to them, namely kill them.
But Dr. Fauci admits that the future is bright, and we can expect extraordinary, breathtaking opportunities in science.
Well, I think the opportunities are like in any area of science, that we are in an arena of extraordinary, breathtaking opportunities in science. From my own standpoint, from infectious disease and immunology, of being to unlock the intricacies and the secrets of the immune system and how you might control it when it's aberrant and supplement it or implement it when it's deficient. With regard to microbes, the challenge of the ability to be able to be prepared for any emerging infectious disease, as well as to look at the existing diseases and actually be able to think beyond just an aspiration, but actually a realistic goal of sending HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis down the route that we did with smallpox, essentially get rid of it, that we're on our way with polio, which we're almost there.
What we do matters, and for Chris Mim, Managing Director of Strategic Issues at the U.S. Government Accountability Office, his agency provides the oversight, the insight, and the foresight that can assist today's government leaders to better manage resources, enhance program performance, and forge a path to a more sustainable future.
Our mission is to support the Congress in meeting its constitutional responsibilities and to help improve the performance and ensure the accountability of the American government for the benefit of all the American people. And what that means is that for us is that we are a congressional agency. We do our work at the request or in behest of the Congress. We do about 900 reviews each year. Most of those are performance audits. Probably 90% of those are at the request of the Congress or written into legislation. And, you know, our work falls into three very broad kind of buckets. This is our auditing work. Oversight, that is looking at compliance, making sure that the funds are properly expended for their intended purposes. Insight, looking at best practice. You know, what is working and can that be leveraged and taken to other areas? And then finally, what we call foresight, which is what are some of the emerging trends that we need to help make sure that the Congress is aware of, both those trends and the implications of those trends for public policy and governance. And so our work falls into our audit work falls into those three very broad areas.
Mim recognizes that GAO and his team works in a very challenging environment, facing what he refers to as a supply and demand imbalance.
I think the first for us is supply-demand imbalance. Congress's need for information, their need for independent, objective, and timely information and assessments of how governments are working, improvement opportunities, has grown markedly and continues to grow. And it's a sign, I think, of our good reputation that they turn to us on that. At the same time, as I mentioned, our budget has been going down. And so we need to – the way we address that is we need to work very, very closely with our clients to make sure that we don't have expectation gaps in emerge, to make sure that we understand what they need and when they need it, and that they understand from us when we think we'll be able to deliver a particular piece of analysis or report. You know, the old saw about the only thing worse than bad news is bad news that comes late or bad news that was unexpected. We make sure that that doesn't take place. And we work with them to make sure that there's no expectation gaps.
The pace at which decision makers need and must have information has changed significantly. And these decision makers need to know what programs work and don't work. Since its inception, GAO's high-risk series has tried to do just that. Mim elaborates.
The high-risk series was designed to do was to highlight among those major areas that are vulnerable to waste, fraud, abuse, or mismanagement. Subsequently, in later years, we added or areas that were in need of fundamental transformation. And so there's a number of areas on there now that aren't waste or fraud or abuse related, but really need a big change on that. And they were designed to focus on those areas that were the most federal dollars were at risk, or human life and safety or well-being on behalf of the American people was most at risk. The original high-risk list, had 14 areas on there. You know, since then, we've added 41 areas. 23 areas have come off as progress is being made, and they actually come off the list. So there are 30 of them that are on there now. This includes everything from the strategic human capital management to enforcement of the nation's tax laws, the use of medical devices. We'll be reporting in February of 2015 with the new Congress with an update on the areas that are on there, as as well as possibly what's coming on and what's coming off.
So if that's
every 2 years with each new Congress. And we do that because it helps shape then the congressional oversight agenda.
As well as identifying high-risk programs, Chris Mim, Managing Director of Strategic Issues at GAO, notes that his agency also issues an annual report on overlap, duplication, and fragmentation in government programs.
Under a statutory mandate, we are to each year issue a report looking at overlap, duplication, and fragmentation, a comprehensive look at 162 different issue areas, and have identified over 380 actions that both the administration or the Congress and or the Congress can take in order to address this fragmentation, the overlap, duplication. So we've been very focused in recent years, and my group has had leadership for this, on how can IRS put in place the right mix of enforcement strategies and citizen service strategies in order to reduce that tax gap, because that's an enormous issue on that. In terms of overlap and duplication and fragmentation more generally, the number of program areas where there's pure overlap in a sense of the same program, same tool going to the same beneficiary or same target population is relatively infrequent. Far more frequent is overlap, which is, you know, same population but kind of different tools or program strategies that are being used there. And then even more frequent yet is fragmentation, which is a variety of different programs using different strategies that are all trying to attack a common outcome.
With all the oversight, insight, and foresight, one thing remains constant. The country faces long-term fiscal issues requiring some fundamental decisions. Chris Mim concludes.
So you have increasing complexity, indirect policy tools, low citizen confidence in government, at the same time that we're cutting back, you know. And so it's unfortunately almost a perfect storm of very, very difficult challenge, very knotty problems that federal managers confront.
We'll continue with the Business of Government magazine when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns.